at kpft.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Morning, and you tuned into a cool place. So what's your story? The newest addition to the eclectic listener-sponsored programs on KPFT 90.1. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown. So what's your story puts the spotlight on soul-inspiring tellers, both pros and newbies, some of whom could be you, who engage us with revealing personal stories, beloved folk tales, and mystic fairy tales by taking us, alluring us, on enchanted journeys and then returning us safely to the present. You know, it may be a toasty July, but it won't melt the confidence that kindles the rich stories that the two talented ladies to my right are about to tell. Yes, you are. You're looking at me. Yes, you are. You're very talented. And by offering a variety of tales powered by meaning and complemented by a medley of expression, I think you're going to love this morning. That's why today's show is entitled Taste Every Wine, because if variety, as touted by German writer Jean-Paul Richter, in mere nothings give more pleasure than uniformity of something, then this morning's So What's Your Story will definitely take us down the primrose path. Now, I have no idea what I just said. Not at all, but I love it. Doesn't that sound great? I have no idea what that just said. Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about the two student tellers who will thoroughly entertain us this morning. Lakhani Mitchell holds a Bachelor of Arts in Sociology and is now working toward a second degree in communication. Once completed, she'll pursue a career in events planning, probably planning her own storytelling festivals. I don't know. Tasha Gardner is majoring in interdisciplinary studies, which means that she either doesn't know what to major in or is the fastest way out of academic dodge. Both of these women were enrolled in Professor Jay Staley's storytelling course last spring and told stories at one of the monthly story swaps held by the Houston Storytellers Guild. And like Nisi, who was a guest last week, Tasha and Lakhani blew us away with their mesmerizing tales, each very different, but equally as riveting. Good morning, ladies. How you doing?
Good morning.
I'm so glad you're here. I know, after 47 emails, not to be paranoid, you're here, and everybody is here so early. I was always, Laura knows that I was always hoping that people would get here by 5:45, but I put paranoia in everyone. People are here at like 4:35, ready for this, right?
Right.
Were you surprised that you made such a hit at the Houston Storytellers Guild when you told the stories?
I was pleasantly surprised. Yeah. I think it was because I told a story about a house.
Yeah.
And so I think that everybody has a story about their family home or memories about their family home.
And you also gave that story. You told that story in a beautiful house. A beautiful house, right? And that was something that a few of the members shared with me after the meeting. She told a great story about a house in this beautiful Heights Victorian. It was really marvelous. It was great. What about you? Did you think that you made a real impact, Tasha? What'd you think?
Yes, they were a very attentive audience that gave a lot of positive feedback and provided a different outlook on storytelling and its effects other than our normal classroom environment.
Right, absolutely. Tasha, I want everybody to know, has these pink post-its on all over her script. I love it because I'm Mr. Post-it. I can't live without post-its. You're a lady out of my own heart. I just love that. Now, you're majoring in communication, even though you have a degree in sociology,
yes.
Right? Why?
Well, I actually started attending U of H downtown to take a Spanish class.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I was there, I decided to take another class, which was public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed the class so much, and so I decided to take another class, and that class led to another class.
You're pretty articulate, so you must have passed.
And so I decided that since I'm going to take all of these classes, I may as well pursue the degree.
Very good. Now, your story is about a house. Now, obviously, we know what the story is about, but tell us in a sentence, Lakhani, please, why is this story so important to you?
As I said earlier, I think everybody has a story about their family home. Mm-hmm. My story mm-hmm. is about my family home, my family's home, where my mother and her mm-hmm. brothers and sisters grew up. And so it's just a place that we called home.
Yeah, it's really an anchor in one's life.
Absolutely.
So what's your story?
Well, there once was an old house that sat on Lot 11, Weaver Place, Section 2. This was not just an old house. It was the house that my grandfather built. It was the house where my mother and her 10 brothers and sisters grew up. It was the place where I took my first steps, spoke my first words. It was the place where I picked berries in the backyard and fished for crawdads in the ditch in the front yard. It was the place near the corner store where I bought my favorite fat man cookies and pickles and peppermint sticks. This old house was the place where I sat on my grandfather's lap listening to him read my favorite children's story. Sometimes I can still hear him saying, "I do not like them, Sam, I am. I do not like green eggs and ham." I love that old house. It was the place of some of my fondest memories. Sadly, after my grandfather died in 1992, visits to the old house stopped. You see, my grandfather's surviving widow moved away. She always hated the old house. It was the place where my grandmother lived prior to her untimely death. And then issues with property rights and upkeep drew a wedge between my family. You see, I told you it was more than just an old house. And so after years passed, the old house deteriorated and became a place of ruins. One day, I decided to drive by the old house. And after speaking to neighbors, I learned that the house was going to be demolished. I picked up the phone to call my mother to tell her, and she called her brothers and sisters. And for days, we tried to decide, should we try to stop this demolition? And as a family, we decided that we shouldn't, because inevitably, the house was going to be demolished. But I assured my family that I would be on site at the time of demolition to watch the final chapter of this old house come to an end. I remember demolition day. Ironically, it was December 7th, you know, that day that will live in infamy. I arrived early that morning. I stood in the front yard with tears streaming from my eyes. And I thought to myself, how could a house that weathered storms and hurricanes and 11 children and a host of grandchildren meet this fate? I saw the demolition crew arrive, and I heard the crew leader say, "I'm going to do a walkthrough." And so I asked him, "Can I go inside? This was my family's home." And after thinking about it for a while, he agreed to let me go inside. And so while I was inside, I was able to see all the destruction and deterioration of that old house that I loved. I turned to my right, and I saw a small object sitting on a mantle. And I reached for it, and I grabbed it. And I said, "It's the rock that my uncle brought home when he returned from Vietnam." And so I clenched it tightly in my fist, and I just kind of stood there, frozen in time. I regained my senses when I heard the crew leader say everything was clear. And so we exited the old house. I walked out to the street, and as I watched this machine pull the old house down piece by piece, I thought to myself, this process really is like death. And I opened my hand and I read an inscription that was on the rock. And it read, "The dear things of home have eternal life." And so even though the old house no longer stands, her soul still lives on in my family and me. And for those of us who experience life in the old house, we have the memories, good, bad, and indifferent, to share with our family and friends. I'll always remember the old house that set on Lot 11, Weaver Place, Section 2. And that's my story.
I have forgotten how beautiful that was. Really, I have forgotten how beautiful that was. That's a beautiful story.
Thank you.
It just unfolded so naturally as you told it. So descriptive.
Thank you.
So detailed. So detailed. Beautiful. Taste every wine, a variety of tales on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. I'm your host, Hank Rubicek, with my guest student tellers, Tasha Gardner and Lakhani Mitchell. Tasha, anything that you remember about your old house growing up?
Well, like Lakhani, and I'm sure most people, and held a lot of childhood memories, like Christmases. My grandfather would go about preparing different foods, and he'd have everything over-decorated, and he'd make sure that all of us grandkids had plenty of snacks and all the junk food we could eat.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Wonderful. Your professor, Professor Staley, has been on the show several times, and he always talks about Christmas, and he talks about his mother coming around the corner with the coffee mug, and he knew, and his brothers knew, that that would be his mother's last Christmas. And as they sat down to open the gifts, they always open the gifts very quickly, mm-hmm. right? And suddenly, in the midst of opening gifts, he tells the story, I looked at my mother, and suddenly I started to open them so slowly, hoping perhaps that the more slowly I opened the gift, the more longevity my mother is given. It was a very, very tender story, but it all had to do with the house, just had to do with the house. You had mentioned that your house has soul.
Yes.
Yeah. How would you define that? How would you explain soul in a house to someone, Lakhani?
I think the soul of a house has to do with what the house really represents, the experiences there, the memories that are shared between family and friends there, as Tasha mentioned about like Christmas. You know, Christmas is usually a gathering with friends and family. And so that soul of the house is just, you know, the memories that are shared in the home.
I knew you were going to talk about your house today, and I thought about my house. Growing up, my wife and I went to my 40th high school reunion. Yes, I'm that old. My high school reunion a couple of years ago, and of course I went back to see my old house in Cleveland, Ohio. And the first thing I noticed is how small it was. I thought it was a huge house. I thought it was the biggest house in the world. There was no house larger. And I looked at the front lawn, which had a hill. I used to climb up the hill with a toy gun playing war, and it took forever to climb up the hill. It was about 3 feet tall. Okay, that's what I noticed. In the backyard, I went to the backyard, and I saw the tiniest yard I've ever seen, and I thought, again, that was huge. It was so large, I remember I used to make it into a baseball field. See, I had no friends. So in the back, I used to play wiffle ball by myself. Yes, you heard that right. And I would always pretend to be the Cleveland Indians lineup, and I would be everything from the announcer to the pitcher to the batter, both left and right-handed. It was amazing, you know. So I'd be back there, and I'd go, you know, batting in the fourth position, the right fielder, Rocky Colavito. I'd be 7 years old, so give me a break. And I'd throw the ball up in the air, hit it over the stupid little fence, and say, home run! And I'd, you know, it would be amazing. Now, in the house, our favorite room was a basement. Now, my grandmother cooked in the basement because she didn't want to get the kitchen messy, all right? Now you understand why I'm obsessive compulsive. It's very hereditary. Take my word for it. Now, when you go down to the basement, let me take you on a quick tour. When you go down to the basement, underneath the stairs, there were about 30 pairs of shoes lined up next to each other like soldiers. Okay, that's one thing. I know, sick. Now, right next to the shoes, there was what my grandmother referred to as a cold locker. It was a cellar, and you walked in, it was cold, and she had everything in there from food to homemade pickles to a bicycle, and I used to play general store. I used to get this little pad, and people would come in, and I'd say, how can I help you? Because we had everything, absolutely everything. Now, when you came out of the cold locker, the first thing you saw was a dryer, and then the furnace, and then this contraption called a gasinator. I have no idea. And then there was a shelving unit in the corner of the basement that housed my brother's monster models. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there was a sewing machine. There was a mangle that my grandmother mangled all the sheets. Then there were some racks of clothes, and then, are you ready? There was a commode. There was a toilet just sitting there. And when I tell that to people, they go, no, really. On my son's head, there was a toilet sitting there, just sitting there, uh-huh. All right? I'm not saying we were normal. And then there was a sink, and then you came back to the stairs. And this was our favorite room. And I couldn't possibly tell you why, but it was the place we all congregated. Mm-hmm. We talked. My grandmother cooked down there. You know, that's where we stored the popsicles. It was just a lot of fun, and that was it. And, you know, not only do houses make great stories, but they make great songs. You know that, right? I have a just so happen I have a list here of some of the songs that none of you have heard because you're all young. Right? House of the Rising Sun, right? A House is Not a House, Luther Vandross.
I know that one.
Jail, thank you, good. That was last century, though. How could you possibly know that? Jailhouse Rock, Elvis. Back to the House That Love Built. Tito and the Tarantula. I bet you have that album. Hmm? Yeah. It's My House, Diana Ross. Our House, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Burning Down the House, Talking Heads. House of the Holy, Led Zeppelin. Brick House, Commodore. And you get the general idea. But houses are very meaningful. And when we think about houses and we think about variety and we think about all those sorts of things, I'm always reminded of what Coco Chanel asserted. And she said, there's no time for cut and dried monotony. There's no time for work and time for love. Just time to be at home and to relax. And that's good. That's very good. You know, throughout history, traditional cultures have recognized the role of storytelling in teaching values to children and adults. Tasha, you have a fable called The Vulture Learns the Law of Nature. It's a fun little ditty, but in a sentence, tell us why you like it.
It's a cute story that reminds us that we all have rules and rules to abide by. Mm-hmm. And while we may think we're getting away with something, there's always someone watching, waiting to let us know that when we mess up, we can get back on the right track.
Yeah, and that's a great insight because fables really do personify the human condition, and they teach us about ways of regulating our lives, so you're absolutely right on. Tell us the story.
It was summer in the African safari, and the animals were hot. All the animals that could hang out in the mud were hanging out in the mud. All the animals that could hang out in the trees were high up in the trees. All the animals that were able to burrow in the earth were deep in the earth. All except for Monkey. Monkey was in the branches watching the sky, watching, watching. And there he saw it, the little dot, Vulture. Well, Vulture had a problem. Vulture was hungry. All the animals normally would come out to die, but it was so hot that none of the animals were coming out to die. Well, up pops Rabbit, and there Vulture sees him, and he drops down. Hi, Rabbit. Hey, Vulture, how's it going? Oh, it's hot. Oh, yeah? Yeah, my ears can't cool down. Oh, well, I just came down here to warm up. I was up there in the sky, and it's freezing up there. My feathers were freezing. I had to come down here to warm up. Oh. Well, here's an idea for you, Rabbit. Why don't I take you up into the sky so you can cool down some? Oh, really? You do that for me? Yeah, I'll do that for you. Come on, hop on. Rabbit hops on Vulture's back, and they go up high into the sky. And when they get up really high into the sky, Vulture goes, hey, Rabbit, how's it going? Oh, it's great. My ears are cooling off. It is wonderful up here, wonderfully cool. Okay, well, hang on. We're going to take a dive. So, Vulture goes down for the dive, and as he goes down, he banks off to the left. Ah, splat. Rabbit hits the ground. Vulture had a rabbit stew that night. The next day, Monkey's watching yet again the sky for Vulture. Vulture is circling the sky, of course. This time, a bushy-tailed squirrel, hops onto a branch. So, of course, Vulture pounces. Hey, squirrel, how's it going? Oh, I'm so hot. Well, I just came down here to warm up. It is cool up in the sky. Hey, why don't you go up there? No, I can't do that. I can't fly. Oh, here's an idea. I can take you up. Oh, would you do that for me? Yes, that'd be great. Hop on. So squirrel hops on Vulture's back, and they go up high into the sky. Vulture asks squirrel, well, squirrel, how's it going? Oh, it's great. My tail's cooling down. Oh, this is wonderful. Thank you so much. So he goes, hang on. I'm going to take a dive. So Vulture takes a dive, banks off to the right. Ah, split. Squirrel hits the ground. Vulture has squirrel stew that night. The next day, monkey's watching the sky again for vulture. So monkey actually walks out this time. So as soon as he sees vulture, he walks out. So of course, vulture pounces. So vulture pounces on rabbit. Vulture pounces on monkey. Hey, monkey. Hey, vulture, how's it going? Oh, it's hot. So Vulture says, hey, it's good. I see it's hot. Why don't I take you up to the sky to cool down? Okay, so, yeah, sure, that's great. So, monkey hops on Vulture's back, takes him hopping to the sky. Are you cooling down? How's it going? Oh, it's great. I love it. Thank you so much for the ride. So, of course, Vulture's normal ploy. Hang on. I'm going to take a dive. So, this time, when Vulture gets ready to take the dive, monkey wraps his tails around his neck. Hey, what's going on? Hey, monkey. Hey, rabbit. Hey, vulture. I know you've been doing all this stuff, but didn't your mama teach you the laws of nature? You're supposed to eat things that are already dead, not make them dead yourself. And you better straighten up and fly, right? So, monkey makes vulture fly him all over the African savannah. So finally, Vulture goes, okay, I'm tired. Can I let you down now? So he finally lets him down. And so when he lets him down, Monkey goes, remember, straighten up and fly right.
Very good. Straighten up and fly right. So that's the moral. Yes. That's the moral.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, you told that story great. I know you're nervous. But you told that story great. There's a lot of dialogue in that.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about why fables are so very difficult to tell. They really are. They require a lot of concentration, a lot of dialogue. You did a beautiful job. You really did. This is Hank Rubicek, and you are tuned to So What's Your Story with guest tellers Tasha Gardner and Lakhani Mitchell on KPFT 90.1 Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, 89.7 in Huntsville, and 90.3 in Livingston. Tasha, the vulture learns the law of nature, teaches a number of things. What's the one thing you want your listeners to learn from this story most?
Just normal, basically, to just follow the rules, and if we follow the rules that were set forth before us, we'll all get along great.
Okay, follow the rules. Is there ever a time that we shouldn't follow a rule? Can you think of a time that we should ever follow a rule?
When you're rushing to work, and you need the speed to get there. So.
Right. Okay, good. That's a good insight. Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, sometimes we talk about that because rules are important. It's important to be able to comply, but sometimes it's also important to break away. It really does. Lakhani, you have a favorite children's story that you remember growing up?
Green Eggs and Ham.
Yes. You made reference to that,
yes.
Of course.
I love the rhythm.
Right. Absolutely. Right. I do love Green Eggs and Ham. I do, Sam. Right?
I do not like them.
I do not like them, Sam. I am. Right? Very, very good. Tasha, what about you? Great story growing up?
Cinderella, of course.
Cinderella, of course?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cinderella's always a fave.
Yes.
Right? Always a fave. You know, all genres of stories are very meaningful, but fables are really very special. Animals are used to personify humans, and they propose stories about the ways people live so children can connect with their own lives. And I think fables are guiding lights used to mold our attitudes and a way to implement values in our hearts. They teach empathy and compassion, integrity, loyalty, and so much more. And just like the vulture in your story, Tasha, I know that you want to become a librarian or a school teacher, and fables will certainly be an important part of that job. They have to be a very integral part of the job. Now, a tip for telling, a quickie segment on learning to tell a story. A variety of tales deserves a generic tip. Beginning your story, a prologue, is perplexing to even the most seasoned teller. It's easier with folk and fairy tales because Once Upon a Time lifts the story into imagination, taking listeners into a new dimension. Narratives best begin by answering the question, why does the story matter to me? I had a student who recently asked me how to start a narrative, and after he told me this story, we crafted this. Remember times when you'd ask your mom, is Dad in a good mood? If he were, you would ask him for money. If not, well, you'd wait. He was in a bad mood all night, but I couldn't wait. I'm glad I didn't. I met my father for the first time that night. That was meaningful to that student. And that was really the essence of the story. And he grabbed our attention immediately. Make your prologue audience-friendly and specific. Get comfortable and deliver with confidence. Also, too, it's important to know that if you can want all these tips, these great tips, you can get all the tips you want. Just come to the Houston Storytellers Guild Monthly Story Swap, held by us on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 at St. Andrew's House at 18 and 11 Heights Boulevard. It's 18th and Heights. I'm president and can tell you that we're the nicest folks in town. Just ask Tasha Lacani, right?
Right.
You two are on there. Oh, my God, you loved us, didn't you? Yes.
Yes.
Check out our site at www.HoustonStorytellers.org for all the fun happenings. If you want to be a guest on So What's Your Story, send me your ideas or short blurb that describes your story to Ruby, R-O-U-B-E-Y, story@gmail.com. Stories must be told in 4 to 6 minutes. If you have questions about crafting or telling a story, send them to me, and I'm going to answer them on the air. Manny, a teacher, wrote in and asked, how should he ask questions about stories for his students? They don't seem to give him any answers. Well, after 37 years, Manny, don't expect any answers. But you might want to ask him questions like, what music would you use to introduce a scene if it was a play, right? You can always ask him about motifs. So again, if you have a question, write into Ruby, R-O-U-B-E-Y story@gmail.com. It's all over by the shouting, ladies. Thank you so much. Bill Moyer said, creativity is piercing the mundane to find the marvelous. And we found it this morning with Tasha Gardner and Lakani Mitchell. Thank you so much to you both and to all of you. Make KPFT a part of your day every day. And join me every Monday at 6 a.m. for So What's Your Story? Start your week off right and expect a smooth one to follow. I'm Dr. Hank Rubicek, reminding you that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Take care of each other.